Bruce Pratt, Gary Haskell here with you. And we're about to be joined by one of my very favorite writers. And I mean that as honestly as I can be. I just have tremendous respect for him. He's also been a judge of a contest. He's written for all the major publications. And I'm really glad that I get the first chance since we talked about Thelonious Monk over a year ago to talk today with Colin Fleming. Welcome aboard, Colin.
Hey, buddy. That was a ways back, wasn't it? But listeners should know that along with the good Mr. Kimball, the good Mr. Pratt and I have gone on to become friends, and
yes,
we often exchange texts and emails and things of that nature. But we don't often talk aloud, so here we are.
Yeah, and one of the things I thought would be really interesting to talk about is that you and I are in a position to see things about publishing and writing and the like that the rest of the world thinks they see but don't see. And when we look at the current state of the publishing industry today, if you could put your finger on the one thing that is absolutely gone downhill, what would you claim that is?
There's nothing real about it. Everything happens for reasons that have nothing to do with the work. And it's not that those people that you mentioned could not see, and I think that's an important distinction to make. It's that they have moved on to other things. They're not invested enough to be able to care to see. So, for instance, if you have a box and in the box is something great, it does not matter really what's in the box. What matters is the packaging of the box and the other boxes that surround the box, the satellite boxes, and those are the people shilling for that and the people who are making sure that this given book is on this given list and it can come in and it's already favorably reviewed. And would be if there was literally human excrement on the pages, because it's a done deal. It's all but payola. And that's the reason why nobody reads. It's not because of short attention spans, and I think that's overstated. And it's not because of the demigod of Netflix. It's because you are looking at things that are not meant to connect with readers of the world. They are for a very hermetically sealed island of misfit toys, in essence. And that island polices itself, and it becomes about a vanity show. It becomes about cronyism. It becomes about ruling the fiefdom. And that's what's happening. That's why people don't read. And consequently, that's why people don't write as well, because they're not trying to invent. They're not trying to reach people. They're not trying to connect. And really, if you are not trying to reach that other person on the other side of the table, and that person is the only person that matters, you should be doing something else. You shouldn't be here for your dollhouse. So that's the main problem, I'd say.
Absolutely. I find that I will often say to my students when I'm working on something they've been writing, and they're undergraduates, and undergraduates are not expected to write at certain levels, but I will say to them, you know, how do you want this connect to other people? How do you expect the reader to engage what you're writing? And they'll say to me, oh, I only write for myself. And I go, well, that's not writing, that's journaling.
Sure, and that has its place, too, and that can become a semantical foray, something that we might tell ourselves is writing, is journaling. I don't really think the distinction matters, and that's an honest way to write. And ultimately, you are writing. You're just writing for someone on the other side of the table, that being you. You're on both sides of the table. You're, in essence, playing a game of ping pong with yourself, and that's fine, and that's healing, and that's therapeutic, and it can bring us to deeper levels of insight. But what I'm talking about is that kind of writing onanism that you see where it's like, this is for, the pen is not waved through the air. The pen is wanded through the air. It's like, look, Ma, I'm doing a writing move. I am insecure. I live in a valley of nullity. And please, 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 other people of the system, enable me. I'll enable you back. I got your back. And we will all just delude each other. And if along comes someone who has genius, who can reach people and lots of people, we're going to hate that individual because they are a threat to their system. That's something I deal with. But journaling is great. And oftentimes you'll see people who are not professional writers who write better than professional writers because they write with a certain realness. Sometimes a grocery list has more narrative to it than a story you're going to see almost all the time in some fancy schmancy magazine, because you're seeing elements of someone's life. You can piece together a narrative from, oh, he's buying this, not getting this anymore. oh, you had a loss. Maybe that's why you have an extra of this. And it tells a story. And stories, there will never be anything more powerful in this life than stories. Stories are everything. It's how we interact. It's how we interconnect. And I think kids, I think students, I think my plumber who sends me a note when he sends the bill, and it's like, oh, okay, that's interestingly written. It's human, and it's real. And I'd say that's the number one thing that you don't get out there. You don't get that realness. And Bruce was real. It doesn't mean that it's minimalistic. It doesn't mean that at all.
Right.
But we all know when we're being real. When we go to a party and we're putting on airs to get through that Christmas Eve party, we know we're not being real. When we call our best friend and we say, look, I need to level with you. I can't get a grip on things anymore. We're being real. And we know it too when we're writing.
Yeah, one of my favorite writers, Joan Connor, just a master of the short story, I think, and had someone who was, in the way the word is intended to be used, was really a mentor to me, someone that really helped me with my writing. He likes to say, humans are the only species who have a narrative history and who rely on narrative to tell stories. And I think that one of the great points you make is that there are stories being published in magazines. I haven't had a subscription to The New Yorker now in almost 15 years that are published. And I look at them and I read them and I say to myself, it can't be me week after week, issue after issue. I can find nothing human in these stories.
A lot of times, though, that is a status symbol purchase to sit on a fancy table in Darien, Connecticut, and it's not actually meant to be read. It's not read by the people who oftentimes will have it there as this trophy in their home. And there are other writers like that too. I don't think anyone has ever read Roxane Gay and thought, you know what, I like this. This is good. There's always a different motive there. And these things are as disposable as if they were never written in the first place. They will not matter the next week after they've ran. They're just there to be the ornament of an industry that was in the margins, which is further pushing itself to the point that it's leaving the margins. And it's become a punchline because, again, people don't read. And it's like, oh, here's my house in Greenwich, Connecticut, or Highland Park, Illinois, or wherever it may be. And I have this New Yorker with this George Saunders story, and there's no one on planet Earth who understands a freaking word of it. But I am very, very important, and I have status. But you're probably incredibly insecure. You're probably depressed, and you need to go for a walk and focus on things that matter more in life.
Right. One of the great things I find in teaching undergraduate poetry, and I love teaching poetry writing undergraduates, is for all their life they've been told they aren't smart if they don't understand some poem that I don't understand either. And I always say to them, what is wrong with reading a poem and telling me, you know, this is what I think about that poem. I really liked it. It really reached me in a certain way. I think that probably another thing that's really killing us as writers is the way that people can't make a distinction now between that which someone calls independent, which means self-published, and people like you, and to some extent me, who are published with smaller houses but legitimate presses. People just look at the cover and they say, oh, that's a book. That's a writer. This must be really good, or he must be good if he's a writer. How do we get past that charade?
Well, it's early in the game for me, and I'm certainly not killed yet, and I'm going to get past everything that's happening with the system, and I think overhaul it and introduce a new one. But there is that level of intimidation that people get. You see it at the museum, and people will see a painting, and it will not perhaps mean something to them. And they will default to saying, well, I wasn't an art history major. And you'll see that happen with literature, too. And I didn't learn a single thing in college. Everything I come on the show, Downtown Inns, and talk about, and go to my website and see me write about, those are all things. No one taught me a lick of any of that, because I don't believe in any of that. I think you can go out and you can become an expert in something if you are born with a certain amount of ability to begin with. But I'm here to tell you that no one from that conclave should be able to pull intellectual rank on you. What they are really doing is something for themselves. They're doing that for their ego. And we all know that people who are arrogant, should know, generally tend to be very insecure people. They are eaten up all day long by the green beast of envy, too. And that's the trickle down you're getting. What you think as a living, viable, breathing, feeling, emoting human being is ultimately what matters. And we know when something is real and when it's good and when it connects with us. There is nothing harder to do as an artist than to truly connect with people. And when people write now, they often try to impress you by showing you how smart they are. They drop in a word used incorrectly, like tintinnabulous. And people say, oh, fine, oh, look, you did that. Oh, olfactory, wow. But really, if you want to prove that you're smart, connect with somebody. Whether it's in writing, whether it's in friendship, whether it's with your estranged kid, there is nothing harder than truly connecting with someone. And when it does happen, it's the most powerful thing there is. And we can all share in our version of that experience, I would say.
Well, I find that whenever I read your fiction, I make those connections. As I think I told you in a recent email, I really admire people who can write a great story that has fewer than 1,500 words. Mine tend to be between twice that and maybe 10,000. And the ones I have published that are short like that are really mean a lot to me. But I got to tell you, your story, Jute, which was about 1,200 words maybe, that...
It was. That's the thing. And people usually guess a number like that. It was like 625.
Was it 625? Wow.
There are different ways. I was talking to a friend about this. There are different ways for something to be long. And a lot of times when you're reading something that someone writes, they don't have what I call instant tone. They don't have instant arrival. They have, oh, here we go. I will set the scene for rambling pages. You're not instantly dropped in, boom, here we go. It's like, again, that idea of the hockey players like Paul Coffey. He is at full speed within three strides. He's not ramping up between the blue lines. He's already halfway to the red line from the blue line, and he is just smoking down the ice.
Well,
that's something that can't be taught. And then when you have something like that, whether it's 650 words or 650,000 words, word count becomes irrelevant because of the immersiveness of the experience.
Yeah, I always think of Vonnegut's great advice, 30 pages into your novel, cut out the first six, because it took six to figure out what you needed to do. Well, Colin, I'm really glad we had a chance to have this discussion on air, because I really admire the way you battle against the system, and I know you're going to succeed, and I wish you the best of luck with everything you got. Come writing. Have a great holiday. Rich will be back next week, but we'll stay in touch.
Okay, sounds good, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Colin Fleming. And, you know, on a personal note, because it's Tuesday before Thanksgiving and I can get away with taking that extra second, if you haven't read Colin's fiction, he is really, really, really good. Take it from someone that has read some years, as many as 15 or 1,600 short stories in a year. I've never read one by Colin I didn't like.